Now, if somebody asked you to turn on the lights, would you presume that the place is in darkness? Or at least it would be hard to see? Over the holiday seasons, I get an opportunity to speak with different young people. And in Florida, I had the opportunity to speak with one of our college students when I was living there, who was home for the holidays. And the conversation went something like this. After we chatted a while, we came to faith, and I said, "Do you believe that God has revealed himself in Jesus Christ?" And this young person said, "Yes, I do." Now that is a tremendous statement of faith. And so I asked this question: do you believe that Jesus Christ rose up from the grave and has a claim on your life? And he said, "Yes, I do." So I said, "What are you going to do about it?" And then I waited. And there was a long pause, and finally he said, I don't think I quite understand." Do you understand? What are you going to do about it? When you joined the church, you said you believed those kinds of things. And I'll tell you what followed up right after that. I said, "I want to read you a story from the Bible, very short story from the Old Testament." He said, "Okay." So I opened up the Bible to the story of Methuselah, and I read the story. Methuselah lived 969 years, and then he died. That's the whole story of Methuselah. I said, "As far as I am concerned, that is the saddest story in the whole Bible." And he said, "Well, why do you find that sad, Pastor Aaron?" I said, "Well, Methuselah lived longer than any person ever recorded in the history of the world. And all they could say about him was that he died. That's all they had to say." And I go right back to the same question. Do you believe that God has revealed himself to you in Jesus Christ? What are you going to do about it? Maybe that is the chief barrier of the gospel. And getting the gospel out to the world is that the people who have it don't really know always what to do about it, or haven't done anything about it. We have the light of Christ. Christ, the light of the world. We have the light of Christ within us, and we don't always turn it on. Are you turned on by the light of Christ? I have to tell you, I was really, really happy with the Christmas Eve services this year in the church. It excites me to see everyone gathered around in a circle, lifting up their candles, flickering the light to the world. And I have to wonder, how does that light flicker at other times in the lives of the people of faith? Does it happen every day in our lives? Can the world out there see the light burning within us after Christmas Eve? I want to tell you a story that happened to me right shortly after I entered the ministry. I became the associate pastor in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I arrived there in March, and I stayed about 5 weeks just to get to know them, and then they sent me off to Florida to get married. And Barbara and I were going to drive up after the honeymoon, and I headed out to go to Atlanta straight through to pick up Barbara and her mother at her sister's, to then go to Florida, and in one of those states in the middle somewhere, I had to cross a long bridge, and it was under construction. So all the lights were out on the bridge, and half of the bridge was not working, and so it was a two-lane road over this bridge. And as I headed across what seemed to be miles and miles, all of a sudden my headlights started to dim, and I knew my battery was going. And I had to think very quickly, and I couldn't stop in the middle of the bridge. So I decided that I would conserve the energy of this blazer, and I turned the lights off and just tried to drive with the parking lights. And there was a car ahead of me, and I got up as close to him as I could without actually touching his bumper. And I made it across that bridge, was able to pull over and flag somebody else down and get some help to get to an exit. I have often wondered if that guy ever knew that I was there. I'm certain he could not have known how important he was to me, because every time he sped up, I sped up. And every time he slowed down, I slowed down. And his headlights had to serve as my headlights across that bridge. And if he wasn't in front of me, I'm sure I don't know if I would have made it. Are you the headlights for somebody? Is somebody behind you? Might somebody be behind you, depending upon you to shine the light down the road, and you not even know it? The church can do that sometimes. It often does. I mean, concentrate so much on itself and use up its own energy in the way it is going that it forgets that we have to give light to the world. And we end up following the taillights of the world instead of shining the headlights to society. Getting so wrapped up in our own needs of light that we fail to shine. It's always time in the church, especially after the holiday season, to turn on the lights. We don't have a dead battery. We have the light of Jesus Christ. Let me read to you again what Isaiah said. Arise, Jerusalem, rise, clothed in light. Let your light shine. Your light has come, and the glory of the Lord shines over you. For though darkness covers the earth, and dark nights the nations, the Lord shall shine upon you, and over you shall his glory appear. And nations shall march toward your light, and kings to your sunshine. Now, the only thing that I don't like about this text is that it was written 2,500 years ago, instead of being placed in the Sunday morning paper today, because it's good news. It's something that's brand new. It's something that the people who run this country ought to know. It's something that should be read at the United Nations. Because time hasn't changed all that much. Not really. 2,500 years ago, it was the promise of a new Jerusalem, and it came. It came when they came back from Babylonian captivity and they reestablished a new city, Jerusalem. But also came the Greeks and the Romans and the destruction of that city in 70 AD after Jesus. And the dispersion of all the people into the world. But never at a loss was the concept of a messianic hope that would bring light to the world. And this thought has never been lost on the people of God who recognize Jesus as the light of the world and have sought to bring his good news of that light to people across the ages. There was an eternal aspect to what Isaiah had to say. He said it 2,500 years ago, and in that message we discover the gospel still present today. But darkness still covers the earth. You see, most people are not free. They're not. Most people do not know Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, and many have never heard of him. Most people have not seen the light. They have not seen it. And it is time for the Church of Jesus Christ in the world to turn on the lights. Isaiah says, if we do, nations will march toward your light, and kings and rulers to your sunshine. Can you imagine such a concept, that the rulers of the nations of the world will follow the direction that Christianity gives to the world? It's prophesied It's spoken out. It is the formula for the world. The liturgy in the church calendar mixes things up for us. I mean, we will cram a week or a month or a year into just one day in the church calendar. Sometimes we'll take a generation or a century and we'll put it all together as if it happened in an hour. Just look at the nativity scene. We have the conception of Jesus, the birth, the visit of the shepherds, a visit of the magi, Herod killing all of the infants. And, well, we know that between conception and birth was at least 9 months. It took probably at least 2 months for the shepherd boys to arrive, and it could have been as much as 2 years before the wise men ever get there. But we put it all in one package, and we mix it up. But how would you like to have been one of those three wise men? You know what they were doing? They were following a star, following a light. And they did a stupid thing along their journey. They knew where they were going. They knew what they were supposed to be doing. And they had direction in their life. They had light. And they stopped and asked somebody who didn't know anything about it. King Herod. You ever do that? We do that often in our faith. We have the light of Christ, and we go out and we ask the world where we ought to be going and what we ought to be doing instead of giving direction and giving the light. And we're talking about the nations and the world, but it's extremely personal. It's what goes on in the lives of every Christian. You can find that direction for your own life. You can find that excitement of the light in your life. It can give you direction on how to live. Or you can follow way behind in darkness. Even when darkness covers the earth, though, the glory of the Lord will shine through the people of God. The world tried to snuff out the light once on a cross, but it got turned on again in the resurrection. We're going to come to the table that symbolizing not of the snuffing out of the light, but the turning of it on. And the most important thing that we will do at this table is to break and to pour, because it will symbolize the light that is in us. We can break our lives, we can pour out our living so that the whole world can see the light of Christ, turning it on. When I was a kid, I used to sing this little song in Sunday school. Maybe you heard of it. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Raise your hand if you heard this song. We learned it when we were so young. We should make sure that we never, ever forget it. You are the light of the world. And with the knowledge of the light of Christ, you are wise. Maybe one of the three wise to the world. Arise, Jerusalem, clothed in light. Your light has come, and the glory of the Lord shines over you. For though darkness covers the earth and dark nights the nations, the Lord will shine upon you, and over you shall his glory appear, and the nations shall march to your light, and kings and rulers to your sunshine. Amen.